Many of us were introduced to the British character actor Bob Hoskins through his crime roles, a mob chief in The Long Good Friday, a low-level member of the underworld in Mona Lisa, and a gangster club owner in The Cotton Club. But it was his leading role in the comedy Who Framed Roger Rabbit that made him a star in America. Roger Rabbit is now out on home video. Hoskins played opposite an animated rabbit. The film was hailed as the most convincing attempt to have cartoon characters and actors share the screen. The animated characters were added after the actors did their scenes. That meant Hoskins had to do his part talking to characters that didn't yet exist.
Basically, I had to hallucinate, which my daughter, Rosa, who's three, she taught me how to do it. She's got these, she was three at the time, and she's got these invisible friends. And I realized that when I saw Mary Poppins and most of those other shows, it didn't work. You were always aware that this was a gimmick. These were cartoons, and it remained paint. So, and also, eye lines, if you're that close, it notices that you're not actually looking at someone. You're actually looking through them because your eyes are wide, your pupils are wider apart.
Mm-hmm.
So, like when we're kids, our imagination and reality are blended. They're almost the same thing. It's so close to the front of our head, we can bring it out and look at it. And as we get older, the imagination goes further and further to the back of our head. But, I used to sit for hours with Rosa, and she'd sort of play with these imaginary friends, and eventually I saw them. But the problem is that if you do that for 16 hours a day for 5 months, conjuring up these hallucinations, eventually they get out of control.
You know, many of your roles have been underworld characters. In Roger Rabbit, you're a hard-boiled detective. In The Cotton Club and Mona Lisa and The Long Good Friday, you play people in the underworld. Do you gravitate to those kinds of roles?
No, I think they gravitate towards me.
And why do you think they do?
I don't know. Maybe I... People take me for an underground sort of... I'm pouring some water out, by the way.
Okay.
No, sir. I don't know. I think if you've got a face like mine, you don't usually wind up with the parts that Errol Flynn played, you know?
In the movie Mona Lisa, you played a pretty small-time criminal who gets out of jail and gets a job as a call girl's driver. Kathy Tyson plays the call girl, and she works in very pricey hotels, and in the beginning of the movie, you come to pick her up wearing inappropriate polyesters. And I want to play a short clip from the movie. Here's a scene. We've just picked her up after one of her calls.
And now?
You leave me here.
Good night, then.
You'll have to get yourself some clothes.
Well, we'll have to get myself some clothes.
If you're to drive me, here, use this.
I'm not having you paying me.
Why not?
You don't even like me.
I can claim it.
In this movie, you play someone who is kind of slowed to comprehend what's happening. I think one of the most frequently, your character's named George, and one of the most frequently said lines in the movie is, "You don't understand, George." Can I ask you, I don't know if you were conscious of how you did it, but can I ask you how you tried to capture the facial expressions of someone who didn't quite get what was happening around them?
Well, one thing you don't do is concentrate on facial expressions.
Uh-huh.
If you do, you're just making faces. What you've got to do is think the character. You've got to be the character and let the face take care of itself.
I'm going to ask you about one more scene in Mona Lisa. There's a scene where you're driving down a bridge in which a lot of prostitutes work, and the windows are rolled down and the car is stopped, and one of the guys walks over to the car, sticks his head in the window, and starts insulting you. You stare at him and then explode. You just take his head in your hand and start bashing it against the door of the car. Then you throw him out and drive away.
Mm.
What did you think about when you were shooting that scene?
Mainly, I thought about not hurting not hurting Perry. The guy's name was Perry Fennick, and I sort of like when you're doing that kind of thing, it may look very violent and all the rest of it, but what you're thinking about is please don't let me make a mistake.
Oh, no, you know, that those sudden outbursts of violence on the part of a character like the one you played give real interesting clues to what kind of character the person is and what kind of tensions they have inside them. Now, I read somewhere that you initially wanted to tone down the violence in the movie, and I wonder why.
Well, it wasn't a question of just toning down the violence. The violence was... it was thoughtless. There was nothing... behind it. It was just someone, a violent person. It was, you know, a lot of films that you see are just about someone being violent, a violent person. Well, there are very few people that are just violent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's reasons for them being violent. And the reason I accepted the film, the reason the film appeal to me was that it's a love story, a very strong love story. And although a lot of horrifying things happen, they happen because someone loves somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me was important. There's so many films now about revenge and hatred and sort of viciousness and sadism, but this everything that happened in that film was purely because someone loved somebody.
It's really a very poignant performance that you give in it.
Thank you.
I want to talk to you briefly about another movie that you made, The Long Good Friday.
Mm.
I want to play a scene here. And your character is trying to put together a deal with organized crime concerns from America. While an American is visiting your character in London, some of his English business associates are murdered. And your character gets the idea that they're being murdered because somebody's trying to mess up the deal that you're putting together with the Americans. And here's a scene where you discover a bomb was left in your casino.
I wonder how it got disconnected.
Well, the wire must have come loose when Lou opened it.
Stroke of luck, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Last night, were there any peculiarities?
Usual crowd. Regular punters, nothing really.
Well, no strangers.
A few Arabs. It's a good night. Nothing unusual.
Nothing unusual, he says. Eric's been blown to smithereens, Colin's been carved up, and I've got a bomb in me casino, and you say nothing unusual?
Did you try to hang out with any gangsters, mobsters, before doing this role?
Yeah.
See their life? You did?
Yeah, well, I it must have been crazy, really. I went down to these clubs. I met a load of gangsters and said, teach me to be a gangster.
What kind of clubs?
Well, sort of gangsters' clubs, where all the gangsters hang out.
Well, what do you do? Go and say, hi, I'm an actor. I'll be playing a guy kind of like you. So I see how you behave.
I'm playing a gangster in a film.
Mm-hmm.
Can you teach me to do it? And they thought it was very amusing.
I guess it's kind of flattering to their ego. In a
yeah.
Way.
Oh, yeah. Well, there were a lot of real villains, actually, in the film. Like, there was one scene in it where, apart from the crew and me and Derek Thompson, there wasn't one person in that room that wasn't under suspicion of committing a murder. There was a very heavy mob. It was quite funny, actually, because at one time I was doing a scene and I was shouting and screaming and doing a thing, and one of these guys came up and said, hey, you don't have to do that. I said, what do you mean? He said, you don't have to shout. They know who you are. And I'm like, right, fine, yeah, okay. So I was very quiet after that.
That's great.
And the scene worked.
Well, did you get any cards or phone calls from any of the people who you apprenticed after they saw the movie?
No. Well, one guy who was quite a famous villain in London, escaped from prison just after I'd made the film. And I was in a pub, and someone came in and said, someone wants to see you. I thought, oh, God, what's this? He said, no, it's okay. And this guy had was on the run, and he was hunted by Interpol and all kinds of people. And I walked into the pub, and there he was, standing there. And he said, Listen, Bob, I've seen the tape of the film, and I just want to say we're glad to see one of our own doing well. I thought, I've never hurt anybody in my life. What are you talking about? And certainly never killed anybody.
So you didn't call the police afterwards and tell them that you just met with this guy, did you?
No, certainly not. I just went back to the pub and with trembling hands had a very large scotch.
Can we talk a little bit about your background? I'm real curious about what kind of neighbourhood you grew up in.
Working class.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a normal working class area. There was, a mixture of hard-working people, layabouts, villains, gamblers. Like a normal area, It was a mixture of everything.
Which side were you gravitating to when you were a teenager?
Survival, I think, just to earn a living. I was never a great one for, I was never very clever, I don't mean I'm stupid, what I mean is, street talk and the street kind of, survival, where some people really thrive on the street, some people become very rich on the street. I never did. I was sort of pretty ordinary, really. It was only when I was pretending to be on the street that I started to get rich.
I don't know if this is a true story or not, but the story that goes around, which I suppose is true, is that you got your first role by accident.
Mm, yeah.
Right? Would you tell the story?
Well, yeah. God, it sounds terrible now. I was in a bar in an amateur theatre, and there was a lot of people there sort of reading these, well, at the time were scripts. I didn't know what a script was. And this guy came down and said, right, you're next. And I, am I? And I'd had enough drink to sort of think, okay, I feel a bit adventurous. Went upstairs. And they said, have you seen the script? I said, no. What does it look like? And they gave me the script, said, do you want to read it? And I read it. And they said, well, do you want to read it out loud so we can hear it? So I read it out loud. And I got the part. I was playing the lead in this play. And the first night, an agent came to see it and said, you should take this out professionally. I said, well, get us a job and I will. And she did. And I've been a professional actor ever since.
So who did you learn from? Did you learn from a lot of the actors and directors that you worked with when you started performing on stage?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mainly learned from women.
Why is that?
Well, I realised very early on that, drama is about very private moments. Like, most of the time, people walking around hide behind a sort of shield of style or whatever. But drama is about showing those very private moments, those painful moments, those ridiculous moments that make up the human life. And because women have had to keep their mouths shut for sort of thousands of years, they developed this technique of making those private moments felt very clearly. Like you can walk in a room and if there's been a row between two women, you know. You know what I mean? Or if a woman sort of wants you to know something without telling you, you know. And that's the job of an actor, to make an audience know.
No, see, what I find interesting, too, about what you're saying is that you have an incredible style on screen, but I understand what you're saying, too, is that what makes a good performance is having that style and let the inside stuff show behind it.
Yeah.
To have those breakthroughs to what's behind the style.
Yeah, yeah. Well, 90% of the job, 90% of being an actor is just telling the story.
Right, right.
But it's that 10% where that inner thing has got to show.
Was your Cockney accent ever a problem in roles you had to play?
Not really, no.
Did you have to learn different accents when you started acting? Did you already know how to do that?
Yeah, well, I suppose if a guy... I've always told jokes,
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to tell jokes, there's always racial jokes. And I used to tell all kinds of racial jokes, you know. So, yeah. All kinds of different accents.
So you have to do accents to tell the jokes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, gosh. You know, while we're talking about actors and actresses who you learn from, I know you performed, I think, pretty early in your career in a play with John Gielgud.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything from him?
Yes, I did. Well, he was extraordinary, Gielgud. Because I had only been in the business, 2-3 years. And suddenly I was on stage in a 40-minute scene with John Gielgud, and I had all the lines. I couldn't believe it. And he was wonderful. He was really wonderful to work with. And I never forget, I had a line in the scene. What was it? I can't remember what the line was now, but it was a funny line. It was a gag line.
Uh-huh.
And... But I it wasn't getting as much as I thought it should get, you know?
As much laughter?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I said to him, you know, what am I... I said, I'm not getting enough out of this. He said, well, what you should do, he said, is when you come to the line, step back 2 paces, count 2, and then say it. What? You've got to be kidding. No, it'll be fine, I promise you. And so he came to it. I'd forgotten about this. And he was sitting up on this big box all the way through the scene. And I came to the line and he shouted out down to me, step back 2 paces and count 2. I thought, oh, you've killed it. Thanks a lot. So I did. I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2. And the audience went crazy. I got around. And I looked up at him, and he's not very good at winking. And there he is, trying to wink at me. You know, I told you so. Well, after that, I did it again the night afterwards. And I got another round. I thought, he must be doing something up there. What's he doing? This can't be me. So the night after, I did it again. And quick, as soon as I said it, I whipped round and looked at him again. And he was still sitting there trying to wink at me. You know, he wasn't doing a thing. And every night after that, I stepped back 2 paces, counted 2, and got around. And I could never figure this out. And ever since, every single show I've ever done, there's always a point where I'll step back 2 paces, count 2, and I've never got a thing, not a titter. It's never worked since.
So there's not something that has changed your career forever from
no,
this
no,
little
no,
lesson.
It's driving me nuts.
Do you think he was really, like, making faces at the audience or doing something behind your back?
Well, I thought he was, and I thought I'd catch him out, but he wasn't, no.
That's funny. Thanks so much for talking with us. I've really enjoyed hearing from you immensely. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.